Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
In Washington, D.C., there's the Washington Monument, the Capitol Dome, the Lincoln Memorial, and for people who live and work in the district, Eleanor Holmes Norton is a living monument to the battle for civil rights in America and the rights of people in D.C. to official representation. Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton has represented the district for nearly 25 years. As the delegate representing D.C., Congresswoman Norton has the power to serve on committees in the House, but cannot vote. She began her lifelong career in public service as an activist and helped organize what became known as the Freedom Summer, a movement that brought white and black college students to Mississippi to register black voters and build a grassroots campaign to destroy Jim Crow laws. Since we are broadcasting from WAMU in Washington, D.C. today, we wanted to spend some time recalling the 50th anniversary of that Mississippi Freedom Summer, a movement that finally led Congress to pass the 1965 Voting Rights Act, and Congresswoman Norton's role in that event as a young lawyer and activist back in 1964.
The first law we passed was not the Voting Rights Act of 1965, but the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and it did not deal with voting. It dealt with employment discrimination, and it dealt with public accommodations, which had been focal points of the movement. Now, why, you might ask, didn't we go for voting rights right away? As you might imagine, John, voting rights was the more difficult issue. You had to speak with Southern Democrats who had no expectations that African Americans who had been kept from voting would turn around and vote for them.
Part of the problem with the voting rights piece of this was that, like so much in the struggle for, emancipation in the United States, these were issues that were determined by the Constitution to be state matters. Voting rights and voting procedures were state purview, state jurisdiction. And so the states could make the argument, well, we're just, you know, protecting our voters here with these laws, and it's none of your business, federal government.
Well, you make a very important point that I think may get missed in all of this. There is no right to vote in the Constitution of the United States. Isn't that interesting? The Voting Rights Act is controversial precisely because it intrudes the federal government, if you will forgive the word, into this jurisdiction of the states in order to acquit the principle that is in the Constitution, and that is equal protection of the laws. The reason it is so controversial today is because the Supreme Court has said, well, the time has passed, and the Congress is going to, we hope, and I'm afraid not this session, or at least not before November, but we hope Congress is going to say we make a finding that, in fact, some of the states still do need the discipline of the Voting Rights Act. And I think you will see what some of the states, especially some of the southern states, have done to mean that we indeed do still need the Voting Rights Act of 1965 to continue.
Your work in Mississippi is really interesting in all of this. And, you know, if you look back on the career of Lyndon Johnson and even listen to some of his recollections of what went on in the 60s when he was president and running for president, he tends to remember 1964 as a pretty darn good year for him. But there was one event where you and the Mississippi delegation confronted Lyndon Johnson directly in a year where he thought he had everything going for him. What was that like?
Indeed, that was a confrontation with our own party, the Democratic Party. I had worked in Mississippi for voting rights, and by the time 64 came and I'd just gotten out of law school, I was one of the authors of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party brief. That was our brief challenging the traditional Mississippi Democratic Party. Ours was a delegation of Mississippians that was integrated blacks and whites, And one of the great leaders was the great Fannie Lou Hamer. Lyndon Johnson was very afraid of Fannie Lou Hamer because she was a powerhouse. This is a woman with a sixth grade education, had worked on a plantation all her life, but when she spoke, she had eloquence that was on the level of Martin Luther King.
But the amazing part of this is that he was terrified that in a year when he had everything going for him, your challenge to the all-white Mississippi delegation in a public forum like the Democratic National Convention would hand an issue to the Republicans all of a sudden.
Well, frankly, I have to say now, looking back at history, no longer being, a young whippersnapper, he had every reason to be afraid. Democrats had won elections in a very strange way. Since Franklin Roosevelt, a great coalition had been created. Those were Northern liberals and intellectuals, Western Democrats, and Southern Democrats. He was afraid if the Democratic Party lost the South, it could not win elections. But look at what happened. He won hands down the election. And while they gave us, our delegation, two seats, the delegation refused those seats. They did not believe that they could accept two seats when the Democratic Party of Mississippi was so clearly exclusionary.
Your entire career has been fighting for those self-evident truths that are in the Declaration of Independence, and some of which didn't end up in the Constitution, like the right to vote that's not in the Constitution, as you said. There's also taxation without representation, a self-evident truth that you've been fighting for right there in the district.
Yeah, talking about a truth that's not in the Constitution, but one that predated the Constitution. We went to war over taxation without representation, and it is a matter of the greatest irony that the capital of the United States would be left without, or would be left with, I should say, taxation without representation. John, the people I represent pay $12,000 per year per capita in federal income taxes. That turns out to be the highest level of income taxes paid by any Americans anywhere. The framers of our Constitution, the founders of our country, would never have left anybody behind. And the very last people they meant to leave behind were the people who lived in what was become the nation's capital.
Any chance that's going to change?
Oh, it is. It's got to change. In 1964, there were people saying, is there any chance that we're really going to get public accommodations and the right to vote for African Americans and the right to an equal access to job, after 100 years and more when we haven't had that? Well, we got it. But it only comes through struggle, John. Nobody gives anybody in this country anything.
Well, there's a lot of struggling going on in Washington these days with the divided parties and the inability to get anything passed. So maybe those neophyte strugglers there on Capitol Hill can learn a few lessons from you, Congresswoman.
I'm trying, John. Boy, am I trying.
Eleanor Holmes Norton is the veteran representative in the House of Representatives for the District of Columbia and has spent decades fighting the good fight for the people of D.C. and for us all.